Good afternoon. It's good to see you here. My name is Bao Zhenghao. I'm assistant research scientist in Texas A&M for Life Research. In this presentation, I'm going to discuss the water extraction for use and green yield. In Jura toilet corn is Texas High Plains. Okay, we know corn is a major grain crop in the U.S., and the U.S. corn production is a vital determinant of the world corn grain supply. This slide shows that corn production and corn exports in the world and in the U.S. from 2002 to 2013, which suggests that during the past 12 years, on average, 39% of global corn was produced in the U.S. And the U.S. corn exports accounted for about 55% of total global corn exports. Now, drought is currently the most important factor limiting corn production in the U.S. We can see from 1960, several drought in the U.S. occurred in 1983, 88, and 2012. This slide shows that yield difference between drought years and other closed years. We can see that in the drought years, the yield is decreased by about 20% to 30%. So in the Texas High Plain, the corn production is severely limited by water shortage. There are two factors related to the shortage in the Texas High Plain. One is rainfall. So during corn seasonal, the rainfall is about 233 millimeters, which couldn't meet the corn seasonal water requirement. Another limited factor is the irrigation source, because in the Texas High Plain, the primary source of irrigation is from Ogallala aquifer, which is a closed aquifer with minimal recharge capacity. Over the past 40 years, the dramatic increase in water withdrawal for irrigation has caused a severe decline of the groundwater level. So in the Texas High Plain, anticipate water shortage will challenge the corn production. So as the water resource for crop production become limiting, maybe adoption of drought tolerant is one way to reduce drought. Another possible approach is utilizing appropriate irrigation water management, such as deficit irrigation. So, in this study, our objective is to investigate the difference in soil water extraction, water use, and yield performance between conventional hybrid and drought-tolerant hybrid, and different irrigation level. So, our field experiment with Dr. Conducted in 2002 and 2013 at Texas A&M AgriLife Research Station. This field experiment was a split plot design and integration with a main support factor, and the hybrids was a subplot factor. There are three irrigation level and two hybrids. Of the two hybrids, 1151 with a drought-tolerant hybrid, and D49 with a conventional hybrid. So let's look at the results. This slide shows the soil water extraction in different period of 2012. So in these three graphs, the average value of two hybrid was used. First, we can see that three irrigation level have the same. Maximum extraction depth is about 1.4 meters. Also, we can see that in each period, the profile soil water extraction decreased with increasing water supply. Also, we can see that under 50% ET treatment and 75% treatment, corn plant faster extract more water from upper soil layers than from the deeper soil layers. Also, in 2013, soil water extraction showed a similar change as seen in 2012. But the difference is in 2013, we can see that the maximum extraction depth was observed in 1.2 meters. Okay, that slide shows the soil water extraction difference between hybrids. That's the hybrid difference was found in only in 2012, mainly at green filling stage. Left graph shows soil water extraction and under 50% ET. We can see that D49 extract more water from upper soil layers. 1151 could uptake a little more water from the deep soil layers. Also, under well watered conditions, as compared to 1151, D49 could uptake more water from a whole soil profile. Okay, that slide shows soil water extraction throughout the measurement period. So among different irrigation level, we can see that 50% ET treatment has the highest profile soil water, water extraction, followed by 75% ET and 100% ET. Also, we can see that among soil layers, 60 to 80 centimeter or 80 to 100 centimeter had the highest soil water extraction. Okay, that's the seasonal ET in both years. We can see that seasonal ET was strongly affected by irrigation level and increased with increasing water supply. Also for 50%, 75% and 100% ET, average seasonal ET is about 560 millimeter or and 670 millimeter. Also, we can find 1151 has the same or have similar or less seasonal ET as compared with D49. Okay, now we can see that from that slide we can see that irrigation level has an important impact on the water use efficiency. Across hybrids, we can see in both years, 50% ET has the lowest water use efficiency. As we compare 75% and 100% ET, we can see 700% ET has the same or higher water use efficiency than 100% ET. Across the years and the irrigation level, 1151 had a higher water use efficiency. Okay, that's the biomass yield and the yield comments. We can see for three irrigation level, the average yield is about 7 to 14 microgram per hectare. Okay. Also, we found that when we reduced the irrigation from 100% to 75%, we can find that the canal number was not significantly reduced, which means that the yield loss from 100% to 75% is mainly because of reduced canal width. Also, at the current average years and irrigation level, 1151 showed a higher yield biomass harvest index and canal width. Okay, that slide shows the relationship of green yield and biomass harvest. that slide shows the relationship of grain yield with kernel weight and kernel number. Okay, let's look at the conclusion. So as compared to the conventional hybrid, deed hybrid can extract less or the same amount of soil water, but the 1151 can extract more water from the deep soil layers and drought conditions. On average, DT hybrids had higher yield and water use efficiency than conventional hybrids. Also, we found that high yield in DT hybrid was associated with higher biomass harvest index and kernel weight as compared to conventional hybrids. So, adopting DT hybrids can provide yield benefit and maximize water use efficiency under water limited condition. Also, I will give my thanks to Texas A&M AgriLife Research Cropping System Program and Pioneer Hybrids International for funding this project. Okay, thank you guys. Okay, I'll give you a sample. In the before planting, you take soil from the... Oh.
Could you repeat the question?
Okay. Can I say it again? I'm sorry.
The question is, in some
okay.
Crops, soil water is affected with negative. So I wonder why.
That means the plant extract water from the soil, but you give more irrigation. That means more water is stored in the soil. You give the water more than plant extract.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
But I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
So it's true. They extracted more water
from the soil. Yes.
So what do you attribute the yield deficit to? Like, if they had more water than the plants that were fully irrigated, why did they, like, produce half of the yield? I guess I don't understand if the plant seemed to be extracting enough water
relative to its required
water amount, then why did they only have half of the yield?
I'm sorry, can my boss ask you a question?
That's because you're under drought condition. Under drought condition, you will extract more water from the soil. That is probably the major source. But on irrigation condition, yield relationship in terms of yield penalty in the
there one more question?
Okay, thank you.
Well, we have some time for discussion, for to address questions, you know, which we haven't, or explore new ground. I would like the speakers to come up here, and we just stand around so you're close by and you can reach the microphone easily. So could you come on up? And since I was the presider, I haven't been asking questions, but I'm going to ask one now. And it's to Marie. Marie spoke on some of the support that they're giving to higher degree training in Africa through African institutions, African universities. And so she sort of hinted, suggested that there might be opportunities for society members, especially university faculty, including retired, that they could be involved in somehow this graduate education, advising graduate students and this sort of thing. So I would like her to elaborate on this, how she sees that this might work, what the opportunities are.
Thank you. I think what we are trying to say is that really there's a capacity gap as far as the teaching staff are concerned in the various universities. But we see the potentials out here that we could really partner with, either within the universities or just, as Professor has said, retired but not tired, that could come out to the African continent to work with the faculty staff, to work with the students in terms of supporting teaching and research, and also just mentoring the students. We also hope that the students could come out here also just to learn, because we think we need linkages both globally between the universities and the institutions in Africa. So I think the main purpose of presenting this case is really to see how can we forge partnership with experts out here to support and to enhance the delivery in terms of quality. I think we are interested in what kind of professionals are we producing? Can they stand to the challenges and address the local problems? Thank you.
Is that of any of interest to anyone in the audience to be involved in something like this? Myself, I'm unofficial advisor, have been unofficial advisor on quite a number of graduate students at African universities. And I think having input into the, you know, and helping define the research, the hypothesis, et cetera, developing a proposal, yes, they do the work, but you review it and make critiques, just as we do with our graduate students here, can greatly enhance their chances of having a successful research experience, you know, and coming out with some publishable work and, you know, getting that satisfaction that we've learned to get from research rather than a disappointing experience. Are there any other questions for other speakers? Or for Maria or other speakers? Yes.
I have a question for about the lot of people's yields and for inquiring about their interest in diversification and into, well, back into, you know, millet and sorghum. And it just seemed like, I mean, people just preferred to grow maize because they were subsistence farmers and they liked it better, it was easier to grow. And I guess I just thought, I mean, what if farmers are the ones, what if they're driving the research agenda? Like, I don't know, I guess I just didn't understand it. You
know, like, you have to account for what people want to do, especially if they're relying on what they're growing for their own resources. Yeah. Hefty question. The question, I suppose, was well, a number of questions, really, in one, I would say. In a more general sense, perhaps one could say, where are the entry points for potentially providing alternatives to whatever people are eating or growing, and where are people sort of resistant to that? And her experience was that farmers can be also resistant to change that maybe a development person or agronomist or somebody coming in thinks is a good change to make. And yeah, that's certainly the case for development. Probably the other speakers here could say also if people come in and I have a few more things to say, but it sounds like you have something strongly to say. For
finish what you're
okay.
Going to say, and then I'll say
what I mean. Great. So, well, there's so many things to say about it. Yeah, no, it's an absolutely great question. My own experience with that, and I suppose in development theory is also the case, that the great majority of people, or culture in general, if you allow me to say this, are resistant to change. And then there's the so-called innovation farmers, who are always trying things out. That's also true in diets, and the rise of these famous chefs is an interesting case in how they become popular on television and all that, because they're the innovation people on the diet side or on the cuisine side. And it's interesting in places like Peru that I think are actually good case studies right now, where there are certain folks like chefs that are becoming even popular in politics. I don't know if that answers the question, and certainly I should also say that very often people come in from the outside thinking it's a positive change where it's not particularly, because it doesn't fit the local context. On the other hand, the case of Southern Africa and maize, for instance, is an interesting one, because maize is really not traditional. It's been there for couple hundred years. It's preferred because it's sweeter. It's not nutritionally better generally. Has a lot of issues with climate change. So it's a complicated factor. Please.
Well, like you said, in my experience, farmers all over the world resist change. One of the things we see in the United States drive out anywhere.
That's a great point. He's really making the point that farmers are very influenced by their peers, really, I suppose, or by seeing it in action. So that, again, why I think actually the chefs on television is a good thing on the diet side.
Oh, many people know this, but if you bring in the class some food from another country, maybe 50% of the students will taste it. Maybe 25% will actually. At least that's in our experience. This is my colleague Tom Silva, and I wrote the book on world food.
Any other questions? Otherwise, I wish to thank all the speakers. Let's give them a round of applause. They generally speak very well.